Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Beautiful Behavior Podcast. I am your host, Diane Sorensen, certified life coach, hypnotherapy practitioner, mother, grandmother, and human fascinated with behavior and how to live our best life. My goal is to offer you another perspective, to see behavior in ourselves, our children, and others from another angle. This podcast is for anyone who wants to feel more connected in their relationships. It's for anyone who feels the pull for something more. It's for parents and those who are not. This podcast is for anyone who wants to take a deeper look, because this is where we talk about breaking generational patterns and outdated cultural beliefs, cultivating deeper connections in our life, and leading our life with more confidence and clarity. And I believe that's when beautiful behavior comes into focus. You can learn more about my process, me, and the three different ways in which beautiful behavior could come into focus for you at my website at dianesorensen.net. That's dianesorensen.net. Okay, listeners, let's go. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Beautiful Behavior Podcast. And I'm very excited today. I have a guest with me, and I think this is going to be a really interesting topic. I'm really excited to dive into this. So today I have Deb Porter. We have Deb Porter here with us. And Deb is the owner of Hold, Hearing Out Life Drama. Did I get that right, Deb?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's an acronym. Sometimes people miss the acronym.
Okay.
Yep.
So this helps individuals and business professionals improve their communication by teaching active listening skills, resulting in positive outcomes. So Deb also provides a safe, non-judgmental space so that those who use Hold's confidential listening service gain clarity and find relief from overwhelming situations. How'd I do there, Deb?
There you go. That's it. That's me. Hi.
Okay. Well, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you so much, Diane, for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So your expertise is in listening to connect. Yes. And I think, yeah, so that listening piece is such an integral part of creating connection. And I think it's one that oftentimes is difficult. And I'll tell you that this is one thing that I too have become aware of, to strengthen my ability to really actively listen, because I can be in my head a lot. So, Deb, how did you get here in this space teaching about active listening? And then I've got some other questions for you as we go forward. So let's start there.
Okay. Yeah. So you just want a little bit of my story so the listeners kind of know a little bit about me then?
I always think it's, you know, nice to know how you got to be like a listening coach, or how you got to be where you're teaching these skills to others.
Yeah, it started when I was really young in terms of the life journey to get to where I'm at now. And so if I can share a little bit of background, I was really young. And one story that I often share is I was in the car with my parents and they had a disagreement and road rage erupted from the driver. And we found ourselves going on the hills in the Midwest, about 123 miles an hour. I was in the back seat. And at the time I could see how their communication missed. I could see how they weren't really listening to each other. And so that experience when I was really young helped me to know I wanted to learn how to do it differently. I wanted to learn how to connect with other people through my conversation. And so I realized that I needed an education to be able to really do that. And so I was the first person in my family to go to college. And while I was in college, I decided that I felt called to more. I felt called to help people. And I thought I was going to be doing that through the church. So I went to seminary. And I got a Master Divinity degree, a 96-hour Master Divinity degree with a specialization in care and counseling. And that's really the first time I was taught how to listen. Nowhere, anywhere in my education are any of us ever really taught how to listen. And so that's how I get my authority. That's how come at least part of why I'm good at what I do. It's not the only reason I'm good at what I do, but that's part of it. My education and background is significant. And so I was serving in the churches and I loved working there, but I was seeing church colleagues be put on trial for performing same-sex marriages. And it was extremely painful to watch because they were losing their pensions, they were losing their ministerial credentials. And at the same time that all of that was going on, a family member came out to me. And I realized that I was not going to if a congregant came to me or if my family member came to me, my answer was, of course, I'll marry you. And so I realized I couldn't stay in the church. And so I left and walked away. About that time, our daughter was about 1 year old. I got married when I was in seminary, met my husband. And about the same time as all that happened, when I got pregnant, we discovered that my husband actually had the same genetic condition that his two siblings had died of in childhood. And we had not intended to have kids because of that. And my daughter came along anyway. And so that was a really challenging time. And I focused instead on becoming, being a mother, learning what that meant and how to do that better, how to do that well. And then my husband really did become very, very ill. And family, friends, and coworkers, they wanted to help, but they just simply weren't trained to listen. And so I had all of these big feelings, these big emotions. People didn't know how to sit with that with me. And so I began to really get the experience of, oh my gosh, this listening is so important. People would often fix it. I'm sure many of our listeners have probably had that experience. And so especially if there are big emotions involved, people want to not feel the big feelings and instead they want to go to a solution. That was painful for me. And so I want to help others to not have that. So,
yes. Okay. So not listening is really connected to our avoidance of emotions.
Indeed. Yes.
Okay. That's so interesting.
It can be, it's not the only reason, but it certainly can be right. A very large part of it. It's one of the major listening mistakes. Yeah.
Right. Because we can't hold space for somebody else's pain when we can't be with our own pain or our own emotions. And so what you're saying is that people would try to fix it rather than just holding that space for you and letting you be able to talk. And I mean, that resonates so much where, you know, when somebody goes through a difficult time, and you want to be there for them. You want to do something. And yet you don't know what to do. And I think a lot of times we just avoid it then.
Yeah.
Right? And we don't do anything.
Yeah.
Or we try to fix it. I mean,
you know. That's pretty much what I experienced. Yes.
Yeah. So something you had said to me once when we first met was, it was so profound to me that we're told to listen, but we're not taught to listen.
Exactly.
And I think that's so big in the parenting, arena, right? Where we're always seeing, oh, they just need to listen, or they don't listen, and how do I get them to listen? So, Deb, is listening a skill that we can teach ourselves?
Oh, yes, it can be learned by anybody. Of course. Yes.
Okay, so how do we do that? Can you talk about that a little bit?
So, what I teach is a framework called the CORE of listening. And the CORE is another acronym, and it stands for calm, outcome, relate, and empathy. So, again, if somebody's trying to take notes while they're listening, it's calm, outcome, relate, and empathy, CORE. And so, most people think that listening starts with the other person. But it doesn't. It starts with you. And that's, and hence the calm. So the first thing, if you're going to listen to somebody, is you must be calm yourself. You have to be ready.
Yeah, so you're right. Like, we think listening is about the other person. Like, well, they're not listening to me.
Well, the other person's not likely to listen to you unless you've been able to show them that you can listen as well. So, I mean, it goes both ways. In order to be heard, one has to be willing to listen. So,
Oh, say that again. In order to be heard, say that again.
in order to be heard, you have to learn to listen yourself.
And is it listening to others or listening to ourselves or both?
Both. It's both. Listen to yourself first and then listen to others. Yes.
So they aren't listening really means I'm not listening.
It could be. I mean, it's not 100%. We can't do a blanket statement and say that's true 100%, but certainly in some cases that's true.
Or
Yes.
we could turn it and ask ourselves, am I listening? Okay, so it begins with calm. So when we're not calm, we have got all this racing thoughts in our head. Is that
So the way it works in our brain is, in order to access the prefrontal cortex, which is the highest thinking part of our brain, we have to be calm. And if we're not calm, we can't get there. And so we can't use the rational part. So I always say regulate, reason, and then, have the conversation.
Okay, great. So, okay, and then outcome.
Okay, so moving on to outcome, what is it that the person that you're listening to, what is it that they need right now from you? So are they needing somebody to just hear them vent? Do they actually have a problem they want to have some ideas and problem solve? Or do they have something else going on that they need your attention for? Getting clear about what they want their outcome to be will help you so much to be a great listener. So
Okay, so here is this where we can ask then, do you just want me to listen or are you looking for some feedback? Okay.
I would. I mean, especially as the conversation goes on, then we start to get into the relate aspect, which is the most complicated, and it's the active part of the active listening. That's where we do those, where we use those questions, those clarifying questions. That's where we want to, make sure that we're reading their body language and that we're following along with the cues, the subtle cues that they're giving us. We're listening to the intonation. We're listening to, the rise and fall of their voice to be able to hear where it is that they're really going. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, I like that. Clarifying questions and recognizing the body language, the nonverbal cues. Yeah. Okay. And then empathy.
Empathy. Empathy is the heart of the listening. This is where we get to the heart. This is, for me, it's my favorite part. I go into every conversation with the mindset and with the intention of meeting them where they are and loving them for who they are. And doesn't matter if I know them or if I don't know them, I can still offer that and bring that to them. And love is a very powerful word. It's a very high vibration, and it is how I intend to live my life. So, yeah. And we can all
Yeah.
do that. We can all do that.
Great.
That's not just something Deb does. That's something everybody has access to.
Right. And so with empathy is really about listening, understanding what this person is feeling. And you tell me if this is on track or not. Listening and understanding what that person is feeling without taking that on yourself or needing to fix or change it in some way.
So it's really getting to the heart of what they feel. So let's give a practical example. It'll help our listeners.
Yeah.
So let's say, for example, you mentioned parenting before. So let's just take a parenting example. So say, for example, we have a teenager and the teenager has just broken up with their boyfriend or girlfriend and they're upset. Mm-hmm. And so instead of presuming that we understand what that teenager feels right now, we need to make sure that we're listening with empathy for that feeling. And so if they're angry, we reflect that back to him or her, I hear you're feeling angry. And if they're not angry, maybe they're devastated. Maybe it's pain that they're feeling. And so whatever feeling that is, we meet them where they are and we accept that whatever it is that they feel, and we're not trying to fix it. We're helping them know, I see you, I hear you, and you matter to me. That's what we're doing when we're listening.
Yeah. And I think that's so important. And it's a practice, right? Because I think especially with our kids, it's so difficult to listen without going, oh, well, you know, let's try and make them feel better, you know, fixing it. And so I think that is a real practice. Would you say that, Deb?
I agree. It is a practice. And I've been practicing it for so long. applying it to my kids. I mean, my daughter was little and she skinned her knee and, you know, she was crying and she hurt herself. I mean, she was in pain. So of course, yes. But I knew that it wasn't my job to take that pain away. My job was to sit with her as a parent and to say, I hear you hurt, and to let her know that she's loved, even though she's hurting. And so I've been practicing it for so long. Sometimes I forget some people are still back at the beginning. And that's okay. And it really is okay. There's no judgment. Wherever you're starting from, you can get to wherever you want to go with that intention and practice.
Right. Because I think so many of us traditionally were, you know, the way that the adults around us supported us. I'm going to put air quotes here, supported us in our emotions was really to fix them, right? To, well, let's go get some ice cream, or let's go, you know, to the mall, to help us to feel better. Or maybe the emotions were just, you know, dismissed or
ignored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big one.
Yep.
You know, especially when, you know, somebody falls down and just ignore it, because then they won't think it's a big deal. And so I'm really getting this emotions connected to the listening, listening to those emotions rather than trying to fix them, punish them away, or dismissing them, ignoring them.
And really letting the other person have what they feel. It's letting them have what they feel. It's understanding what it is that they're telling you, I feel this. And if they can't say, if they haven't practiced the feelings, if they haven't been around someone who's helped them learn what feelings are, you might have to help them name what the feeling is. So say, for example, somebody's experiencing frustration. And so they're verbalizing, you know, oh my gosh. So I'll take the example from my weekend. I had a issue with Walmart delivery. So I was very, very frustrated. And so, you know, I was able to, because I'm self-aware and because I know myself well enough, I was aware, okay, I feel frustration. But if you're talking to a small child and they don't yet understand, or it could be an adult too. I mean, if you haven't been taught how to name the feeling, you're not going to know. So I really was an adult before I learned how to name feelings. And I spent a lot of time learning how to do that. So if any of our listeners also have that struggle, what I did to learn was I checked in with myself throughout the day and I said, okay. And I kind of anchored it to meals and before and after bed. So I had, like, you know, five times throughout the day that I was checking in with myself, what is it that I feel right now? And I forced myself to name it. I actually have a feeling word list that I kept on my an app on my phone. I kept it open. It's from the Center for Nonviolent Communication. If anyone wants to look it up, there's a feeling word list. And so I would look at that list. If I couldn't figure it out, I would look at the list and I would go, okay, pick a word here. And just really worked at building my vocabulary so I could begin to understand the nuances of the different feelings I had. So
yeah, thank you for sharing that, Deb. I had a similar experience and I started learning about my emotions as an adult and learning, just like you said, to different times of the day, asking myself, what do I feel? Naming that feeling. And then the next step for me was to recognize where in my body I was feeling that. And, you know, going back to listening to ourselves, you know, starting to listen to those emotions, you know, I started to have conversations with my emotions. So I'm so glad you brought that up because I think oftentimes we shame ourselves in that, well, I should know how to, you know, manage my emotions when a lot of times we don't. I was, you know, I was an adult that didn't know how to manage emotions and I suppress them and to the point then they would explode and then we just keep going through the cycle. So thank you for bringing that up. And I love how we've connected this emotions with listening.
You know, our emotions, if we keep stuffing them down, if we don't acknowledge them, they will make us sick. They literally will make us sick. And when I was going through my clinical training, I was working at Rockford Memorial Hospital in Rockford, Illinois, and I was going through a program called Clinical Pastoral Education, CPE. And during one of the teaching days that I had, they connected different illnesses with emotion, with specific emotions. So for example, I was assigned to the cardiac floor and we were taught that when we were helping somebody with the cardiac floor, we wanted to be sure to listen for anger that they might not be expressing. And so, it was very clear to me as I walked into room after room after room, that was actually true, that a lot of these patients wasn't true of everybody. You had to really listen. You can't just make blanket assumptions about every single person, but it was a great place for me to start from to begin to say, okay, what physical manifestation am I dealing with? And then to know consequently from my training, what emotion might be there, and super helpful. Yeah.
So listening to anger that's not being expressed.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that is one of the reasons why I do what I do is for mental health and well-being, right? Because not listening and not allowing those emotions, creates so much unwellness.
I don't know if it was like this for you, but I certainly, at the beginning, I was terrified of them. I mean, I was told as a child that I shouldn't have them. And so when I finally started to feel them, it was very distressing to slowly start to say, okay, well, this is, and to let it be, and to let it be okay. But if you haven't done this work, it's so important to do this work. So my business is Hold Hearing Out Life Drama. And so I really, we're not therapists. I'm not a therapist. I do listen, but this kind of deep work that we're talking about right now, that does require therapy. And so I've gone, it's worth it. Never regretted it at all. And it has brought me to where I'm at now with my self-awareness that I'm really happy about.
Yeah. And so, you know, you said, your feelings can be really distressing. And I think that's why we become so distressed when our children are, or other people around us are upset. We'll do anything to avoid having people upset. But we can learn little by little how to listen to those emotions, how to listen to ourselves, and then be able to listen to others.
Yeah. So that's why it's important to establish the calm first. So when you're calm, you know, you can handle it, whatever anybody else is emoting, because you are calm yourself and you can trust that it's, that there's a path forward for them because you have it for yourself.
Yeah. And so you talk about active listening. Do you have a practice for active calming?
So I, for myself, yes. Okay. So I use several tricks, really quick. I'm a real fan of essential oils. I like lavender. And so I find lavender very calming. Next to my desk, I have some lavender that I use, especially if I'm going into a situation where I know there might be some strong emotions. I practice meditation every morning. And before any conversation, I always make sure to take a minute or two. It doesn't have to be a long time. Some people think it has to be this great big long thing. It doesn't. It just has to be enough to center yourself, to breathe, and to trust that all will be well.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Deb. Thank you for being here today. And how can people find you?
If people are looking for me online, the website's hearingoutlifedrama.com. If you like social media, we're on almost every channel. If you search hearingoutlifedrama.com on whatever platform you're on, you'll find us. And if you personally want to connect with me, you need to send me an email, you have a question, happy to take those, info@hearingoutlifedrama.com. will find me.
Thank you so much, Deb, for the work that you are doing in the world and for taking the time to be here with our listeners today.
Oh, likewise. I'm excited about what you're doing too, Diane. Wishing our listeners all the best. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Bye, everybody. We will see you right back here next week.
Thank you for tuning in to the Beautiful Behavior Podcast. If you enjoyed today's show or previous shows, I would so appreciate you subscribing and leaving a review. I am so grateful for all of you listeners who are joining me here for these conversations, because I believe it's through these type of conversations that we start to shift the paradigm, creating a more loving and compassionate world. I hope you will join me here each week as we discover new ways to show up in our lives and create a bigger impact. And if you are ready to take this to the next level, head on over to my website at dianesorensen.net. Again, that's dianesorensen.net. Get on my calendar and see how you can be supported and if we're a good fit, so that you can get out of survival and into thrival. Change is possible, and I've got you.